Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of the new Screensavers is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase.
The Galaxy Note 9 reviewed, turning it to 11 with ELAC's debut 2.0 and taking the hydrogen-powered Honda Clarity for a spin. Live from the TWiT studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers.
Everybody, welcome to the new Screensavers. How's it going, y'all? This is episode 172, recorded on Saturday, September 1st, 2018. I kind of can't believe that it's September already. Patrick Norton with me. I'm Jason Howell. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm terrified of your enthusiasm, Jason. Good to be here.
You know, my enthusiasm is 100% fueled by this coffee that
was handed
to me right before.
Is that pumpkin spice frappuccino sugar mayhem?
No, although it is September 1st, so you'd think that it probably should be.
I had someone walk into the office yesterday with this huge grin on their face. It's Shannon, in case you were wondering, from Technic. And I was like, "You're entirely too happy." And she's like, "First pumpkin spice frappuccino of the season." And
I was like,
"That's a lot of corn syrup you've just ingested."
She's one of those intensely excited about pumpkin spice everything people. Which there are a lot of people that are intensely excited about that.
Are you a pumpkin spice enthusiast?
I mean, I like pumpkin pie. I guess my answer would be no, not really. I mean, it's good in things, but I don't like seek it out.
Got it.
You know?
I've never actually had a pumpkin spice product from Starbucks.
I don't know if I have. I probably have at one point, but apparently it wasn't enough to make me like a diehard.
I have friends who mark it on their calendars. They get super excited. Like, I want to go pick Gravenstein apples. They're like, "I'm going to go stock the first pumpkin spice thing." And I'm like, "Are you going to go across the international dateline to, like, the easternmost?" And somebody was like, "You know, I should do that."
Yeah.
And they started searching for, like, what was the closest Starbucks to the international dateline so they could make a trip eventually. That's on their bucket list now. But they're going to make a trip to, the first Starbucks after the international dateline so they can literally have the first pumpkin spice whatever.
Or maybe it's possible to follow September across the globe. It's always September somewhere. Isn't that how it works, right?
So it's more of a, there's a September here. I mean, you know, climatologically, there's a winter down there while it's summer up here.
I'm just thinking, if you really wanted to, if you were that much of a nut about this, you could follow the pumpkins around the world, but I don't think it works like that. Coming up on today's show, we're not going to be talking about pumpkins or pumpkin spice because we already did that. We're actually going to talk about the Note 9. I've got the Samsung Galaxy Note 9 here. I've been spending my time with it. I'm going to tell you whether it's worth $1,000 or not. What do you think?
I
know how you feel about a $1,000 phone.
I'll give you a hint. Mine costs less than a quarter of the fully loaded version of that.
Good job.
Oh, my goodness.
What else is coming up?
Cheap job. Oh, my goodness. So I've been testing Andrew Jones' latest design for ELAC, the debut 2.0 B6.2 bookshelf speakers, and talking about what makes a good speaker, why these are particularly interesting if you're looking for home theater or home audio, and how to set speakers up so they don't sound awful.
That's advice that I have, and I'll tell you later why, because my home theater is not a theater at all. It's basically a TV.
Okay.
And I'm depressed. I'm sad
for
myself.
I'm here for you.
All right, good. You can help me. Speaking of speakers, see what I did there? It's in here, by the way. I didn't come up with that on my own. Is there any way to keep the noise down that you're sending over to your neighbors through those speakers that you're using? This would be a question that we will have in a call for help.
Oh my goodness, Megan Maroney! Oh, actually, I've ruined it.
What?
I've started with the wrong part. If you're looking to get rid of gasoline, say goodbye to gasoline in your life.
You can go any way you want.
But the range, anxiety, and charge time of electrification terrify you in the automotive travel spectrum. Ladies and gentlemen, the 2018 Honda Clarity fuel cell might be the one for you, if you're in California anyway, because there's only like 8 places you can fuel them. Later, we'll see Megan Maroney, Navigant Research Senior Analyst Sam Abelsamid, take the hydrogen-powered EV for a ride. hydrogen in a box on wheels. What could possibly go wrong?
Who knows? You might travel through time. Isn't that what
8.21 gigawatts?
Exactly. Mr. Fusion. It might exist.
I would like a Mr. Fusion
on the back of my
truck.
And we're going to answer some more of your questions in the mailbag. But all that stuff happens after we do this stuff. This stuff being Hot Topic, because there have been a lot of crazy kind of bubbling news stories throughout the week. One in particular about whether Google is filtering its search engine from conservative publications, that sort of stuff. This is something that kind of President Trump came out with earlier in the week, and it was a thread that pretty much just followed throughout the entire week.
The ever so scintillating lead on there we go. Trump claims Google is suppressing positive news about him and will be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Google search results for Trump news shows only the viewing reporting of fake news media. In other words, they have it rigged for me and others so that almost all stories and news is bad fake CNN. It's prominent Republican, conservative, and fair media shut out, illegal 96% of, and it goes on and on.
I appreciate that you're yelling when he has all caps.
If you type in all caps, I
that's
assume
what you
you're
do.
Yelling.
Yeah, I tend to do that regularly, too. I should remember that.
One of the things that was pointed out is when he posted that particular set of tweets, one of the first results for him involved Fox, which I would say is a particularly enthusiastic supporter of Trump.
Sure.
Which means that either he thinks Fox is fake news along with the rest of the fake news, or perhaps he did not actually kind of get past the first couple results on the page, or maybe the top result on the page, depending on the subject on the page, based on the results, which change based on what people search for and what they click through.
Right. Well, I'm actually kind of, now that we're talking about this, kind of curious whether President Trump, in this regard, is of the habit of being logged into his Google account when he's doing searches, because then, right, his search content would be tailor-made around his activity using the product, which is how
Google
search
suggesting that the
services work.
So you're saying because the president consistently clicks on subjects that are insulting to the president, his search results will cater as an individual to him searching for negative stories about him?
I'm saying maybe. It's possible.
This is the international.
This is how the Google search works.
And the snake ate its tail, and the soul. Well, but if you've never done this, if you have Gmail, you're constantly logged into your Google account. Log out of your Google account, or install a second browser and don't log into Google on it. And just for fun, let's say you've got your regular browser over here and do the Brave browser or Firefox or something else on the other side of your screen. Search for the same thing. And if you have, you know, if Google stores your results and then you go to something else, they change because, as Jason pointed out, they customize your results for you based on the things you tend to click on, because Google likes clicks, because clicks leads to ad revenue, and ad revenue makes the whole world go round if you're Google.
And Google also, yes, all of those things are the reasons behind it, but Google also, you know, says that they want to give you the experience that you're looking for. So much of all of their services, not just search, Android, how they run all of their products is really kind of more and more based around this kind of predictive user behavior sort of mentality of, we've got so much data, so much information on you that we can use that to give you exactly what you need before you really realize that you need it. So
it's like,
I'm just kind of curious if President Trump actually goes to Google and makes sure he's signed in, or maybe he has a personal Gmail account. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever read a news report that says President Trump has a Gmail account that he checks regularly and he prefers inbox over Gmail because inbox is better. I've never read that article.
I feel like sending you to D.C. to try to get that story.
I think we could get to the bottom of something.
Exclusive to the new screensavers, President Trump's email usage.
President Trump enjoys snoozing his emails to tomorrow.
Don't we all?
Well, and another part of this also was he had tweeted out a video saying, you know, I think purporting to show proof of the bias of Google services, showing the homepage of Google search on the day of the State of the Union address every year through Barack Obama's presidency all the way through to, you know, this last year, and showing that when it finally gets to Trump's inauguration days, how there were no links present. So therefore, Google is actively suppressing these links from their webpage. But there were a whole lot, like, as people dug further and further into this, they realized, like, there were actually glaring omissions here. One case on 2016, the Google logo that was embedded on the page was an old school logo, even though in 2015 they completely redesigned the logo to be the new serif font version of it. So that implies that maybe there was some sort of image editing happening. Also, the fact that if you go to the Wayback Machine, you can go to these pages and find, you know, that there are multiple impressions for a given day taken, and that there are plenty of other examples where those links actually exist. I think there was another one found on Reddit. So
are you suggesting that perhaps a video that came off of the internet may have been faked by someone to their purposes?
Don't be crazy. I'd never say that. That never happens.
I as someone who is married to a librarian, you know, vetted sources are a big thing in my house. And just because somebody found it on the internet doesn't mean it's true.
It's not always the case.
So
I guess we'll see. You know, obviously this was a big deal in the EU. Antitrust situation in the EU was not very good for Google. They were fined fined insanely there, and then the question becomes, okay, well, if and when does that transfer over into the United States? Will it? Senator Orrin Hatch asked the FTC to actually conduct an investigation into Google on, around antitrust. So it's kind of bubbling right now.
One of the quotes I saw was basically like, there should be antitrust against Google and Facebook and I think Yahoo.
Or and Amazon.
Amazon was the one.
Sorry.
We should move on.
All right, let's move on to something way more fun, net neutrality, here, which kind of, you know, travels in similar
Remember
murky
waters. Net neutrality.
California, that's the state that we do this show in, approved a major net neutrality bill on Thursday, the strongest state, the strongest seen in any state so far. And Governor Jerry Brown apparently has until September 30th to sign this into law. It makes a number of things prohibited: blocking, throttling traffic, paid prioritization, also zero rating. It would place limits on zero rating. So this is a pretty big deal. Could serve as an example, a template for other states. What do you think about this?
I am in favor of net neutrality. I have had some friends of mine who are against net neutrality literally scream at me about how I don't understand and it's unenforceable and it's wrong. And first of all, there's a lot of fluff around net neutrality. One is a number of the reasons why net neutrality was put into effect at the FCC is because there are examples of egregious violations of net neutrality. Number two, it's amazing what happens, you know, yes, when you actually have competition, but to compete with entrenched cable services who are allowed to sort of create monopolistic networks in communities, or if you look at the example of Verizon and AT&T and others who worked very, very hard to create state legislation to prevent underserved municipalities from creating their own networks, I got to say, I don't really trust most of the massive ISPs, Comcast, AT&T, to look out for my best interests. So I am excited that the state of California has actually planted a stake in the ground and is attempting to make things better for the residents of the state of California. Whether or not it's possible, for me, the ideal scenario is that Comcast looks at this after spending however much they spent on robocalls and astroturfing and fake efforts to push against this. I would just like to see Comcast walk away from the state of California to teach us a lesson. Which then would create a wonderful...
Fine. We're out of here.
We're out.
You're going to have ISPs that actually care about you.
Yeah. And it's funny, right? So I'm in the funny situation where I had been with Comcast for years because they were the only option for me to get any kind of high-speed internet.
Yeah.
And I told myself for years that as soon as there was an option, I would move to that option. And out of nowhere... Alameda, the town I live in California, became the first place for a startup called Common.net, which is a wireless ISP. And when I signed up, they guaranteed me 50 meg up, 50 meg down, uncapped, for $50 a month. And I was typically getting like 150 up and 150 down, and they're not measuring it. So this is fantastic. And they started with Alameda. Now they're experimenting with a much denser community, San Jose, down to the South Bay. And hopefully their model scales because it does not require them to do things like dig lots of holes in the ground to pull fiber, or, you know, dig lots of holes in the ground to pull cable or to string cable on telephone poles, which is also prohibitively expensive and one of the reasons we don't have competition in the sphere. So I say all of this And because I would like to see this law have some teeth. I would like to see, you know, large ISPs forced to behave in a way that doesn't imply, you know, there's, I had a conversation, one of my family members is like, they should be able to charge whoever, whatever they want. And I'm like, remember when you used to negotiate with the Teamsters? And the Teamsters would say, give us a little something-something or stuff's going to disappear. Mm-hmm. I'm loosely quoting, and for any Teamsters in the audience, don't take offense. It was the 70s, and it was North Jersey, and stuff happened. But, you know, what essentially happened is we have cases where Netflix was told, like, yeah, your data ain't getting through unless you cut us a check, Netflix. And Netflix was eventually forced to cut a check to get the packets for which you and I are already paying for based on peering in the network traditions. So I would like to see this law have some teeth. I would like to see other states follow in suit. I would like to see ISPs behave. I would like, you know, AT&T not invent something called a technical economist. Well, you see, Mr. Norton, this is like 10 years ago, if you actually wanted to have 25 megabits per second, you should, you know, you only paid for one web page at a time. At 25 megabits per second. This video streaming, you need a business account. And that will be, you know, some gigantic number. And I get on some level that there has to be, you know, when 30% of the traffic on the web is Netflix, I got it, okay? You're feeling overwhelmed by Netflix. But the reality is the internet has changed. It is going to eat the lungs out of cable systems because cable systems overcharge for crap. Not that I'm bitter about Comcast buying one of my former employers. and it's going to get messier, and they lie a lot. We don't have the carriage for this. You right. do. We right. can't afford this. You can. So I would like to see cranky little wireless, spiky, spunky little wireless networks like Common spring up all over the United States and start ripping the lungs. Because when you look around my neighborhood, half the houses on the block are already on this alternative to Comcast. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see that happen everywhere. And in the meantime, you know, while we're waiting for the free market to pop up all over the continental United States, which isn't going to happen for most of the continental United States, but I dream of options other than Comcast and other sucktastic, my opinion, not the opinion of this show, cable providers, I would like to see somebody walk in like the government and say, you have to play fair.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're attempting to do this with the bill. Obviously, U.S. Telecom is going to sue the states that, you know, they've threatened to sue the states that are doing this.
Of course.
And, of course, California, with the largest example of this, has a lawsuit, you know, that it's going to face.
We also have 10% of the population of the United States.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like there's like 37, 38 million people in California right now. It's a lot of Americans, and they're going to be really upset if they have to follow the rules. They worked so hard to get Ajit Pai into office so he could gut all the protections for people that use the internet. It's not fair that states might actually try to do the states' right things for something that they paid really lots of money in D.C. to make sure did.
You know what I can tell?
There's a phrase I want to use, but it's a family show and I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Bottle it up. I can tell you're very passionate about this. There's something else that I know you're passionate about, and that's 8K, right?
Now that you want to steer the ship.
Not that I'm going to move on to the next topic or anything. But 8K at IFA, let's talk about that now.
We're losing the chat room, Pat. Change the subject.
Come back.
Even the cranky people in the chat room are done with you.
Why do I need 8K, Patrick?
Oh.
Why do I need 8K in my living room? Why?
And you don't.
And did IFA convince you that you need 8K in your
IFA room? Did not convince me. So IFA, if you've never heard of it, is kind of the CES of Europe. Huge show. What's interesting for me is a lot of announcements that traditionally would have taken place at CES, for example, are taking place at IFA. Dell made announcements, Lenovo made announcements, audio companies made announcements. But one of the things that people were really excited about was that 8K televisions from LG and Samsung. Now, we don't exactly have pricing, think 20K. We don't exactly have ship dates, think next year. But it's basically QLED versus OLED, massive 8K televisions with all of the pixels. I don't know if we deserve
all of the pixels and none of the content.
And that's where things get kind of funny, right? So trust me, what you need right now is maybe like a 55-inch TCL 6 series TV for $650. Or maybe if you're feeling particularly fancy, an OLED TV that's HDR. from LG. But, you know, the television companies like making the big margins off the high-profile products. Yep. And essentially, IFA is the shot across the bow for the big-time launch of 8K. And we are still, we're joking in pre-show, you know, we're in the eagle soaring phase where there's like, you know, there's like 12 of these cameras in the world and we'll see lots of eagles soaring and people will be like, wow. That's, look at that detail.
And that's about that, that clip that you see in the showroom is right. about all of the content, encapsulates all the content that you'll actually have access to when you finally bring the 8K display home.
They're going to need some high-quality scalers in these televisions because the best-case scenario is the 4K content. And I have a feeling that 4K scaled to 8K, you know, streaming off of Netflix or Amazon Prime or Google Play or whatever your source is, might be a little rough. Mm-hmm. And there's I feel like we're going to get pricing and ship dates at CES, but I don't really expect any 8K content announcements. Like, there's at least, like, one movie I know of that's been scanned in 8K, The Wizard of Oz, for the last restoration of that. Magnificent restoration. If you ever want to see what is possible in the restoration of a classic movie, the Blu-ray of Wizard of Oz is phenomenal. They actually found all three Technicolor negatives. They scanned them. They repaired them. They matched them. It is... like the standard by which all movies could possibly be turned or digitized. But literally, like, they scan that at 8K and the list of that after that. I mean, I'm sure there are several other movies that have been scanned.
Sure. Well, hey, they're getting ready for it because it's the next most, big thing.
Yeah, and most 4K movies are actually finished at 2K and then upscaled for the Blu-rays. So I feel that I am not holding my breath on the 8K content.
Not anytime soon. But hey, if you want to be the only one on your block that has one, you knock yourself out. You might be the only one on your block that has one of these. Actually, I think more people are probably going to have a Galaxy Note 9 than are going to have an 8K display.
One
but watch yourself. In a couple of years, there's going to be 8K displays on the smartphones anyway. So there will be a little bit of rollover there. So have you been at all interested in the Galaxy Note line? Like, have you played around with any of the Note phones?
I played with, like, a Note 2 back when they were still being called phablets. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was such a long time ago.
So long ago. you know, at this point, you know, I feel that something like this Moto G6 is about as big as I need to get. Can we put these side by side?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. There you go. Now, you know what? You're not too far out of the realm with the Moto G6 and the Samsung.
I also have the case on that. But, yeah, it's...
That's true.
I was laughing at it. Is that an 18:9?
Yes, it's the longer 18:9, 6.4-inch QHD plus Super AMOLED display.
You have the hands for that phone.
I do. Here you go. Yeah, I mean, this type of phone does not feel too large. I mean, it's definitely a large format, no doubt about it. But, for the most part, I can reach around.
Are the letters on web pages any bigger, or is the screen just that much more massive?
Yeah, I don't think things are much bigger. You can go into settings and you can change it all so that it kind of increases in size across the UI, which makes this kind of a good option for people who might have visual impairities that they want to kind of work around. So you can get in there, and that's one of, you know, Samsung's kind of benefits is they've done so much in the software to give you all this customization capability.
If you can find it, it'll be really useful.
Hey, you know what they've done, and I appreciate it. I'm sure they did this quite a while ago, but now we're starting to see in the settings, we're seeing, and probably have been for a while, a search bar that'll take you right there. So if there's a display area, you can just put in display right to it.
For me, when I bounced between like a pure Android phone and I played around with a Samsung phone, my issue was I literally could not find anything on the Samsung because they had crufted up Android so much with all of their awesome utilization tools. That search bar looks fantastic, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like Samsung's come a long ways in the past, you know, even couple of years, right? They've really refined the device design. They don't really change the design much year to year. This Samsung Galaxy Note 9 compared to the 8 are very similar in so many ways. They did kind of move the fingerprint sensor to a more sensible place. They did a horizontal array on the camera instead of a vertical array. And so on the Note 8, you were trying to hit the fingerprint sensor, and you were always hitting the camera and smudging
cleverly
that up.
Located where no one could actually reach it.
Yeah, it was not very convenient. So they've kind of changed that around. You know, but beside that, there's really not a whole lot of difference here. Minimizing the bezels a little bit. It still feels like a super premium device. You know, glass on the front and back, so you got to be really careful about that, obviously. The S Pen down below, they, you know, kind of got went for splashy color design. So, you know, this particular...
It's like a pencil.
...device. Yes, exactly. It comes with a yellow S Pen. And, of course, the big difference with the S Pen this time around is that it has Bluetooth LE inside.
Oh, nice.
So if I go into the camera and...
You will no longer be watching your battery decrease with each...
I can use the S Pen to snap pictures. I can also use the S Pen to control YouTube. So I think if you're doing like a lean back experience with this display, I don't know how you're watching this display and you're so far away from it that you can't just touch the screen.
I'm envisioning you on the plane with your Bluetooth headphones on and being like, and then leaning forward to pull.
I don't know. Yes. No, me just relaxing, sitting back, relaxing with the S Pen in my hand.
See, that's the kind of thing I'm used to from Samsung where they go, you know, we've got to be able to do some random thing with this accessory
to justify it
being there.
Yeah, I feel like the changes that they made to the S Pen, what they really did is they were trying to get more people to actually use the S Pen. Because when I use the Note, like, it's nice to have the S Pen there, but my first inclination anytime I use a Note phone is not, I need to write down a note, so I'm going to pull out the S Pen and do it. Like,
You have two thumbs.
I always side with the thing that I'm used to, which is going into Keep and writing it out, you know, tapping it out or whatever.
If I want to write something that I cannot read, I'll do it on paper, which is much faster than launching the application on the phone.
So, but, hey, it's nice that you can, you know. You
8 gigabytes of RAM, Snapdragon 845. I got to say, I was kind of excited by the storage capacities on this.
Yeah, well, so it starts at 128 gigs of storage. That's the configuration that I have. Up to, I think the next step up is 512. So
I love that.
Half a terabyte. And then there is a micro SD card slot in here that you can also put a 512 gig card into. So you can have a terabyte of storage on this bad boy.
How's the video? Since we actually have enough space on the phone to store all of the video you might shoot at CES or IFA, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do have some photo and video samples. I feel like the quality was good. Obviously, that makes this a really appealing phone. If you're going to be shooting a lot of video, that's me demonstrating.
Is that
the
selfie
S Pen
cam?
Yep, that's selfie and, you know, snapping the shot with the S Pen. So kind of proving, like,
I will say
it's got
vastly...
these different modes. Like, this is food mode. It automatically detected that I was eating a wonderful breakfast.
And put it into food mode?
And puts it into food mode, which kind of has a different contrast profile.
Thank you.
And, yeah, so, you know, they're doing a lot of stuff in software.
Is this
slow-mo?
Playground mode? Oh, whoa.
This is slow-mo, so I put on slow-mo. My daughter was on the swings, and I wish I got
Woo!
A little bit
Get
of that.
Some! Yeah!
Yeah! She's still in the air! So, you know, they've done a lot of software enhancements around the camera. There's actually the two cameras on the back. Both of them have optical image stabilization.
Nice.
So they're both working simultaneously in that regard. So that, you know, helps to stabilize. I'm riding a bike here, and you just don't see very much kind of bouncing.
No, I'm not trying to vomit because of the bouncing camera. This is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Ultimately, Samsung's premium phones, their cameras are always really good. And they're among the best, and so there's really no change here.
I will say the thing that would make me consider buying a $1,000 phone over a $250 phone is the camera quality, because the camera, whether you're talking about the iPhone 10 or presumably the iPhone XS or the Samsung Model 9 or the Pixel 3, there is a huge, huge upgrade in camera as you quadruple the price.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, and this is the kind of the awesome part of right now in smartphones is that so many phones now, just it's become kind of standard that we get a good camera experience. We get good, you know, camera output. We're getting more and more accustomed to that. Oh, that was another slow motion example. But yeah, this is no different. This is of the top tier of phones when it comes to cameras. So that's something you're paying extra for. You're also getting just very, very powerful internals. You're getting the Snapdragon 845 here in the U.S. anyways. Exynos 9810 if you're getting the international phone. 8 gigs of RAM. So, I mean, stacked, that's about as much as you could ever get in an Android phone right now. I don't know how necessary it is, but I'll take it over not.
I feel like it's not necessary, but it's necessary to compete in China with all of the regional Chinese brands.
Sure, sure. Yep. 4,000 milliamp hour battery. That's actually an upgrade from the Note 8. So you're getting, you know, Samsung apparently learned their lesson on packing a lot of battery into the phone, but not having it too compact of a design, so it doesn't, you know, explode.
Yeah.
So that was good.
I was trying so hard not to bring that up.
That's going to dog them for years to come.
Well, it should. When you light cars on fire with your phone, that's a bad thing. Yeah. What's DeX?
So Dex, all right, so I can show this off real quick. Dex has been a feature that Samsung has had available the last couple of years that required an external hardware component. So essentially the idea behind Dex is that you can use your phone as a computer. Mm-hmm. You can plug it into a peripheral, put that into a monitor, and bam, it outputs through HDMI, gives you a full desktop experience, all of your apps. You know,
I was gonna say, it's a Dex top?
Yes. Yeah, pretty much that's kind of what they're going for. You nailed it. So I'm going to go ahead and plug this into what the difference is on the Note 9 is that instead of needing an extra peripheral that is custom made by Samsung, any USB-C to HDMI adapter with USB OTG is going to work. So what you can see now is kind of the desktop experience. This is streaming from my phone. If I go onto my phone and select to use it as a touchpad, I'm going to go like this, and now I've got, you know, I'm controlling, it's a little laggy because it's passing through our video system, but I've got full control with my phone as the touchpad.
Could you use a keyboard and a mouse with that?
Or, okay. So I could sync up a keyboard, a Bluetooth keyboard, I could sync up a Bluetooth mouse, learn those, you know, sync those to the phone, and you would have a desktop experience.
Because certainly Qualcomm wants to take over the laptop market. I love that picture of you.
Sorry, apparently I was doing lots of selfie things. One thing I do notice in Dex is, like, on some of these images, when I was looking at them on a monitor in the other room, is that they're not as sharp as the pictures actually are.
Is that
so? There's some sort of resolution shifting.
Office or your home with the collection?
No, this is an osteopath's office.
Thank you.
And this was actually really low light. So when I was in there, there was not much light happening in that room at all. So I decided to see how the picture would turn out, and hey, it looks pretty good in low light as well. So that's Dex, and you get it included here. You don't need external hardware other than an HDMI dongle.
Right.
This is an anchor.
I was
going to
say this is like a generic anchor
one. Totally. So you just pop it in there, and it's going to work.
Very cool.
So let's see here. Performance awesome. Has water carbon cooling system in there. So like I was playing all the kind of more taxing
water carbon cooling system.
Yes. So it's like a little a copper strip with a little thread in between it, and a tiny, at least this is what iFixit told me, a tiny amount of water in there that kind of shifts to pull the heat away.
So basically, it's another form of vapor tube.
Basically, yes.
Okay.
That's exactly it. That's the better way to put that. But what that means from an operational standpoint is that when you're playing games that would normally like heat up your phone a lot, if you've ever played a game and then realize your phone's getting super hot, it doesn't really happen on this. And I would attest, like in my testing, that did not happen. So
other than like Google Pixel 3, is this kind of the last of the 2018 super phones, flagship phones?
Yeah, I mean, we've got the Pixel 3 around the corner. Mm-hmm. That's the next one that I think people are waiting for.
iPhone XS.
Yes, the iPhone. Yeah, so I guess we kind of have some big heavyweights really right around the corner.
I really want it to be called the XS. Like 9to5 Mac was like, it's the XS.
The 10S, the XS, the XS
excessive,
makes a lot of
sense. The super excessive.
Yes.
Dear God, sell your house and you can buy our excessive 2.0 phone. It's an odd name even for Apple.
The Note series and the iPhones, the next iPhones, are going to be the two phones that really kind of come in that high price point. And, you know, Apple, at least on its end, has proven that people are okay to spend that for the iPhone X. I know that you're not convinced about spending more than $1,000 on a phone, right?
I have to pay for my children and their health and such.
But I mean, it's a big consideration. Like, that's a lot of money to spend on a smartphone.
I mean, I paid $1,000, nearly $1,000 for a maxed out iPhone 6. And then, of course, the extended warranty so I could, because I literally bent it in the first 7 days of ownership.
Of course you did.
I'm not a brute. I just destroy phones, I swear. But it's been interesting to sort of watch the prices escalate. And also, you know, because I talked to somebody about a year ago and they were like, look, if you need RAM, buy RAM now. It's been a year and a half ago. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, Chinese phone manufacturers, like, they're competing by throwing more RAM at the phone.
Oh, okay.
And all these regional Chinese phone manufacturers you've never heard of are buying huge amounts of RAM. And this was a very major...
Supply is being pinched.
Yeah, and this is a big company that buys a lot of RAM to resell in the United States. And he was like, just, if you need RAM, buy it now. I'm like, okay. And I got, you know, RAM I needed for a system. And it's literally, like, doubled in price. And we have phones like this where it's like, you know, even a relatively inexpensive phone like the OnePlus 6, like the maxed out model, has 6 gigabytes of RAM. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy to watch this because are there any combinations of apps that can actually use more than a megabyte or two?
I mean, I think that's kind of the big question, right? Is we're seeing so many of these phones with 6, 8 gigs of RAM on there.
I mean, 3 or 4.
No real indication that the phones absolutely need that. I feel like it's just a mark on in a spec sheet and maybe future proofing. Right. But you know, I guess from my perspective, it's really hard to say.
I love that it has, you can get it with 512 megabytes of RAM and you can still put an SD card into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes me happy.
Absolutely. So then when I'm installing some of the games that I put on here that, you know, take up a couple of gigs a piece, like I'm not even flinching. Even at 128, you know, built-in storage on here, I'm not flinching. But if you had a whole terabyte on here, it's like the ultimate gaming phone, right?
Yeah.
Like you just don't even have to think about it.
I can capture all the things and do all the things.
Yep, that's right. That's kind of what it's all about. So, I mean, I would say all things considered, yes, is the Note 9 a really nice phone? Absolutely it is. And you kind of expected that it would be, right? Like at this point, this series of phones has proven itself to be a powerhouse, really the top end of performance and specs. That's what you're getting out of the Note 9. That's what you're paying more for. The question then becomes, is it worth it to you to pay that much more for what you get out of the Note 9? A lot of people would say that no, the $1,000 price point is just a bridge too far.
I can get a really nice notebook for a grand.
Yeah, well, I know, right? But then at the same time, this is the computer that we rely on day after day for, you know, at least a couple of years, if not longer, if we're a normal human being outside of us, you know, who review new phones every single week. So then from that perspective, maybe it makes more sense.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
The Note 9. It's a good phone, but a little expensive. Decide for yourself. All right. We've got some home theater audio stuff to talk about. We're going to take a look at the new ELAC Debut 2.0 speakers. Before we do that, though, we're going to thank a sponsor of this episode of the new Screensavers, and that is Hover. When you're building your online brand, that's what Hover is all, that's what they're there for. They're there to help you out. It's never been more important, when you're actually building that brand, and you're going to need a good URL in order to do that. Your online identity begins with your domain name. You can put that domain name to fit your passion, whatever it happens to be. Buying a domain name is the first and biggest step when you're building that brand online. It actually tells the online community who you are and what you're passionate about. Web hosts and websites evolve their brand, their website, and hosting needs change. That all keeps your domain separate from hosting and gives you the flexibility to choose the right platform for your business. Because, you know, let's face it, nobody wants to get stuck with a solution that doesn't meet their needs, of course. Hover offers the best in-class customer support teams, no upsells. Hover Connect feature allows you to connect your domain name to many website builders. It's super easy to do with just a few simple clicks. Personalized email that matches your domain further supports your online identity. There's free Whois privacy, whole host of other features. Hover has over 400 domain extensions to choose from, including all the basics, and then, of course, the fun niche extensions that are so interesting to look into and rediscover. This year, Hover is a proud sponsor of the Fireside Conference, which is an off-the-grid, invite-only event taking place the weekend after Labor Day. So you want to check them out at FiresideConf. That's FiresideConf.com. And then go to Hover, and you can build your online brand and be prepared to pitch your awesome business. Go to hover.com/twit and get 10% off your first purchase. That's hover.com/twit. And we thank Hover for their support of the new Screensavers.
Woo-hoo.
And with that, boom, we're in a new set.
Magic.
It's like magic.
Oh, my goodness.
It's as if we do this each and every week.
Oh.
So what are we looking at here?
This is one of my favorite combinations, right? So a company called ELAC
speakers
came out of your target here. Let me pull a speaker away from the edge here so you don't feel so threatened. let me turn that off real quick so I also don't blow anything out. This
All
is two things we're looking at here. This is one of my favorite speakers right now. It is from a company called ELAC. ELAC's a German manufacturer that has been around for approximately forever in the audio industry.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple years ago, a guy named Andrew Jones, which had been designing for Pioneer, ended up moving over to ELAC. And the first speaker he came out with was the ELAC Debut. And this is the ELAC Debut 2.0. And the Debut came out, and it got everybody's like, oh, my God, buy this speaker. It is amazing award when it came out. And then he came out with another speaker about a year later called the Unify B5, which is the one I actually run at home. And you're going to have to spend, these are like $250 a pair. The Unify are the Unify desktop, or excuse me, bookshelf speakers, about $500 a pair, and you're going to spend a lot more money before you get an appreciable sort of upgrade in cost on that one.
Okay, so like what, I mean, you're talking $250 for a pair, like that doesn't sound like very much. Like, is this an appeal kind of a lower end, kind of like starter home theater system? Or like what? Where's the category there?
So these are targeted as a home theater speaker. If you look at the website, right, they have, so these are kind of the left and right bookshelf speakers. You know, it's got sort of an Aramid woofer, a nice tweeter. But if you go back to the picture right there, they have a whole range of speakers, right? Those are a couple of center channels with the bookshelf speakers sitting on top of them, like the 5.2 and the 6.2 inch, two floor standing speakers, and then they have a couple subwoofer options, and then a smaller surround sound speaker. So these will work for anything from stereo music to a full surround sound system, including if you want to do upfiring Atmos effects on that one. Mm. But this was a lot. Nobody really expected this to happened because the original debut was super, super popular, incredibly highly rated. And why fix what's not broken? Thank you. And what was interesting is because they had so much success at this price point with this speaker, a whole lot of other speaker companies decided, like, you know what? It doesn't just have to be ELAC making a quality speaker for not that much money. Because let me let you in on a terrible secret of speakers. Like many other aspects of consumer electronics, a great deal of the cost of the product is in profit. For example, a very, very famous speaker, a home audio speaker, a wired streaming audio speaker that's been around for a long time. You know, this sells for like $180. Mm-hmm. There's $6 in parts in the actual speaker itself. Now, there's another like $25 in parts for all the electronics and amps and the assembly, right? Yeah. But you have to understand is you know, I got to be honest, there are a lot of crappy speakers. Mm-hmm. And there are also a lot of speakers that are very popular on the internet that don't sound very good.
Okay.
Because people love to talk about an amazing $45 speaker they sound. And what happens is most of those, they tend to, when you get into a quality speaker, you tend to have better highs. And you have lows that aren't, they are there, right, number one. And number two, that aren't sort of bloated or messy or sloppy. Mm-hmm. So you looked like you were about to ask a question.
Well, no, I mean, one of the things, like, I consider myself tuned in to what sounds good, but mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily, like, of the level of knowledge when it comes to speakers to look at a speaker and be able to say, now that's a good quality speaker. But I guess my question is, it's very easy to make a speaker look good,
yes.
Right? Like, you can have a basic front side, basic looking speakers and everything. These look a little different. They've got a little bit of extra character. That's not always going to be the indicator.
No.
It's the quality of the component.
In fact,
and how do you even know that?
If you wander into Best Buy or any other stereo manufacturer, you will often find speakers that look really stylish because they got super 100% more shiny on the front. But,
sure.
But the quality is actually, it's kind of like gaming headsets. There's a lot of gaming headsets that are really kind of amazing design exercises. Like, we wanted to make something that looked like it could be mistaken for a background fighter in a battle in a space movie. And, of course, we put RGB into it.
Yes. So, it's,
you know,
and pretty colors.
Pretty colors. Yes. And a lot of crazy, like, this is my space 19, well, I guess it would be space 2144, you know, yeah. Army headset, right? And then they go, crap, we got a design. We got to buy some. Jimmy! Go to Shenzhen, find me some cheap drivers, okay? You got $2. No, not each, for both sides. Yeah, sell them for $200. You got $2 for this, you know, and that sounds stupid, but there's a lot of expensive gaming headsets, for example, that sound like crap.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about this is they changed a bunch of things about the design of this speaker. You got this Aramid woofer, and the reason I use Aramid and other crazy exotic fibers is because they are incredibly stiff. You want incredibly stiff and incredibly light because the music is created. The signal from the amplifier, very wonderful BASX amplifier that I bought out of my own pocket, made by a company called Emotiva. Builds really burly, overbuilt stuff for not much money. Mm-hmm. So the energy, the voltage comes out of this, and it accelerates and deaccelerates the speaker, right? And the speaker moving back and forth like this moves the air that hits your eardrums and you recognize as music. So the stiffer and lighter this is, the easier it is to accelerate and decelerate and create that music that hits your ear. So, you know, they got a quality woofer. They redesigned the tweeter, and they brought the tweeter up sort of to the front of the speaker. And when they did that, it meant, you know, it's normally when you put speakers in a room, and I'm going to sort of, you would normally aim the speakers towards the sweet spot. Yep. And with this, by pushing the tweeter out forward a little bit, it widened. They created a sort of a different waveguide and wired a dispersion so that the idea is that you could actually sort of, you wouldn't have to tow these in, you could keep them back against the wall.
If it was inset more, you'd have more kind of a channel around them through which it's directing to a very specific point versus being up. It kind of allows it to have more of a natural spread.
Exactly. Like we had these, when we first started, these were sort of pointed this way. And what Robert Herron, my partner in crime in AVXL, calls like the king's seat or the sweet spot, where it's like that speaker are pointing towards me. And then there's this sort of, you know, crazy, like the speaker, all of a sudden the music is here, mm-hmm. right? The singer's mm-hmm. here and the drummer's over there. And if you have really good speakers, you have this really huge soundstage.
Right.
But here's the thing. For example, most people don't actually have the ability to put speakers on stands 3 or 4 feet away from the wall. And when you normally, the port here, which is the whole point of the port, is to increase the amount of bass by making the speaker behave like it's in a much larger box.
Yeah, it gives it more of a channel through for those low frequencies to pass through, right?
We'll call it that for now. It's I can't actually explain the physics or the math behind it, so I'll say yes, that's actually
sure,
that works.
Right.
But if you have the port on the back and you shove this against the wall, you end up sort of defeating the purpose of a port. You've stuffed the port and all of a sudden it no longer behaves the way the engineer wanted it to.
Yep.
So by putting this port on the front, you can actually shove this up against the wall. And so I was like, okay, they say I can put this up against the wall. I'm going to put this in the worst case scenario. I put it in my house. I put it up against a big old thing, a sheetrock wall, up on the mantelpiece. And lo and behold, I actually got pretty good audio out of it. Now, if I put it on stands so that the tweeters are at ear level and, you know, the speaker isn't shoved back against the wall, I think the sound cleans up and tightens up.
Sure.
But I was actually kind of amazed that this speaker sounded pretty good where they said it wouldn't sound awful, which is shoved up against the wall, which is exactly how most people actually put home theater speakers in their house.
Yeah. Because people don't have a lot of space sometimes, you know, like a living room, at least I speak from my own experience. In our living room, we wouldn't have the space to put speakers on stands. We're out of room.
So are you still using the speakers on your television?
Well, we have the speakers on our television. We did get a sound bar not too long ago.
But excellent.
Basically, our TV is a 2005 rear
vintage
projection LCD,
stylish.
1080i. It's old. It's beat down. It needs to be replaced. Our whole home theater system needs to be replaced. Yeah, it's pretty sad right now.
I have just, when you're ready, I mean, the thing is, it's good that you have a soundbar, because a soundbar was probably a huge step up.
Yeah, it was, yes.
From the speakers that are in it. Because, you know, if you want to talk about places where they don't spend any money, even when they spend a lot of money, because, like, they're at CES and, you know, in the blah-de-blah model 76,000 4K Wonder Deluxe, we spent hours, six or seven, like, you know what I mean, like designing, like, and they show you all the crazy things that you do to fit the speakers. But the reality is there's no space inside of a TV for speakers, and they can't spend a lot of money on the speakers because they spend it all on the screen and the processing, at least you hope. But take a look. We have a picture of, like, what the inside of one of these speakers looks like. And what they did is they use MDF, like medium density fiberboard, or maybe it's something like that. But essentially they use what amounts to powder wood held together by epoxy, which is super inert and stable. They made it thicker on this, so the speaker, a lot of times when you sort of tap on a speaker and it sounds like a drum, that's bad.
Right.
Because you don't want the walls of the speaker vibrating in and out as that, you know, woofer goes back and forth to create the low end. But there's a brace inside of there right behind the woofer that helps to stiffen the sides of the enclosure, and that makes the enclosure less reactive, and, you know, kind of more of the energy goes towards you rather than out the other five sides of the enclosure, which is a big plus.
Is there any sort of, like, foam or anything in there taking up that extra space?
Yeah, well, what they do, we're going to sort of see if I can do this without damaging the speaker. What they usually do with enclosures is they put batting or some sort of material that looks a lot like what's inside of a sleeping bag.
Sure.
And what that does is it slows around, you know, if I burst into tears, it's because I did something terrible and broke the speakers. But by filling the enclosure with some kind of stuffing or batting, polyfoam usually is what it is, which is a lot like an old-fashioned sleeping bag innard. What it does is it makes it behave like a larger enclosure. And you've probably heard me say behave like a larger enclosure two or three times already, because the way to get the most bass out of something is by actually having a very, very big enclosure, like floor standing speakers usually go down lower than bookshelf speakers. Mm-hmm. And if you have a larger enclosure, you can create lower you can run lower frequencies out of it. So what they do is to literally slow down the movement of the air inside of the enclosure to make it behave like a larger box. That's why they put the stuffing inside.
Okay, because I know I've had speakers in the past where I found the stuffing in there, but also realizing, like, inside a speaker, you need space for the sound to travel through, and that picture didn't seem to show any stuffing.
So. No, well, it's hard to see all the wonderful things inside the speaker if you're just looking at a big box full of what looks like cotton ball. But I'm pretty sure once I pull this back
I'm worried. I'm a little worried. I know you know what you're doing and that it won't break. But
well, that makes one of us.
This is this is the point at which I break things.
Well, okay, so right here,
meaning to.
Very careful to pull that out. So this is actually what you're seeing right now is, there we go. So this, I just forgot the word for this. This is what actually splits the, so the audio is coming in through these wires. I don't know if we can quite see them, but there's essentially, this is really funny. I actually have built several of these, and I've completely spaced on the name. This basically divides sends the low-end frequencies to the woofer. And
oh, crossover?
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's good that we have an expert here. But if you look inside of there, you will see the inside of the case. And somewhere there's a, oh, there it is. So you can just kind of see it right in through here. You can see that white stuff inside of it. I'm not going to pull it because it's probably glued to the outside of the enclosure, but you can see all of that white fluffy stuff inside of there. And that is the polyfill or stuffing that makes it behave as if it's larger. Thank you for remembering the word crossover. You know, I've created digital crossovers using mini DSP, and I've built crossovers, and I've replaced crossovers, and I've recapped crossovers, but I can't remember the word crossover. So I'll say that a few more times so that it sticks.
So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see, though. It's not taking up an insane amount of space in the middle of the speaker, but it's definitely there on the walls.
I've seen some speakers where they basically fill the entire speaker.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. I will fully admit they were probably really low quality speakers that
you
I
never
remember
know.
Seeing inside.
And I will also say, money is not necessarily an indication that you're getting a great speaker. A couple years ago, Robert Herron and I were wandering through CES, and we walked into this room. These huge speakers, they're like 6.5, 7 feet tall. And they were sort of shaped like this, and there was just, it was like, you know what I mean? Like, you're in the Met, and you're looking at the sort of Louis XIV unhinged furniture for insanely rich people who own entire countries department. And this was like this extraordinary inlay. Like, some incredibly talented craftsperson had spent a lot of time working on these enclosures. They were magnificent. And we went and we sat down, and somebody from a very pretentious audio publication spent about 10 minutes discussing the provenance of the recording they were about. It was bad. It was like the worst of wine people going on and on forever before letting you drink. Not that I get to drink anymore, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
You're in the part of the state where we get that.
Absolutely.
And so they finally play it, and I'm like, wow, these really sound like crap. And I'm like, I mean, these are like $100,000 speakers, and they really sound They were okay. And we went like two doors down. There was a set of $20,000 speakers, which, don't get me wrong, is still way too much money for speakers for most humans.
Right.
But they sounded extraordinary. Like everything, like, it was, you could, like, close your eyes and the band was there and you were feeling the thud from the bass and the kick drum and the vocals, and it was extraordinary. It was this amazing image painted in sound. And so what we discovered a couple days later was the $100,000 speakers were actually $400,000 speakers. And, you know, I've said this a lot, you know, there's a lot of audio stuff that's just complete snake oil and BS. Mm-hmm. You know, $10,000 speaker cables, and I've seen, like, you know, little magnetic, like neodymium magnets you use to tune the it's just there's stuff where you get to the high end. You know, a lot of the stuff around HD audio, like, oh, it improves massively. Like, you know what, if you're over 25, you probably can't hear anything in that frequency range anymore.
Right.
And people like to spend money, and I'm down with people pumping the economy.
People are very passionate about audio and sound quality and music.
But it's amazing what you can get for a couple of $100.
And that's the case with these.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you don't have a lot of money, start with used speakers. Start with whatever you can get.
Sure.
You know, one of the best deals out there, I've said it before, I'll say it again, that's Sony MDR-7506. Which is a $79 set of headphones from Sony, which you can also use to, like, drive tent pegs. I mean, they're bulletproof. Mm-hmm. They sound fantastic. Start with them plugged into your phone or your computer. If you want to upgrade, an AudioQuest Dragonfly is a nice step, or a Shit Full of Two, which is a little tiny headphone amplifier and DAC. And just listen to your favorite songs. Pay the extra for Spotify that's been... the premium Spotify, mm-hmm. or for Tidal, or get your CDs and rip them to flack.
Higher definition.
Start with a good source. Start with a nice set of headphones like those Sonys. And then, you know, once you've done that for 6 months, you can turn around and decide whether or not you need to upgrade at that point. Mm-hmm. You may not. You may never. Or mm-hmm. I may have just set you down on a terrible path where you eventually isolate your friends and family by spending everything and money you don't have on a great AudioQuest adventure for the exquisite experience of sound.
But, so what? So are these the speakers that you're using in your home, or you've been testing these?
I've been testing these with a relatively inexpensive Onkyo AV receiver in a 5.1. Eventually, I will find the camera to point these towards, in a 5.1 surround sound system. I've used them in a stereo configuration with this Emotiva amplifier, this BASX. And these are, I gotta give a shout out to Emotiva, because I bought this off Craigslist. This A100, it's a fairly powerful amplifier. It's robustly built, a lot better built than a lot of the stuff you'll find in that price range. Mm-hmm. Onkyo does some nice stuff around $250, $200. There's a lot of used amplifiers. Like, if you don't have money, go on Craigslist and
find
just buy an old AVR, like a 5.1 AVR. Like, nobody wants old AVRs. They sell for like $100. They'll do great with stereo music. But you know, my favorite speakers at home right now are the step up from these, the ELAC Unifies. That's my primary. Like, I'm listening to stereo music and I'm very seriously paying attention to the experience. But I gotta say, these are really impressive and they're amazing for the money.
Nice. $229? No, sorry.
About $250. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I've heard that a big challenger for these, a company called Q Acoustics, which nobody knows in the United States that much. They've just released the 3020i this summer, another $250 pair speaker. A little bit smaller.
Yeah, I was going to say, the scale's a little different. You don't have the bass channel, or at least if you do, it's going to be on the back.
It's on the back on those, so you couldn't shove those up against the wall. But those go down to about 60 hertz, which is fine if you have a subwoofer. Not as awesome if you don't have a subwoofer.
Right.
But I got to say, there's a lot of amazing audio gear out there, and you don't have to spend all of your money on it. Unless you want to, in which case, I'll help you spend all your money, too.
In which case, there are plenty of options for you to do that as well. Awesome stuff. We do have a call for help that is absolutely related to this. I think it's time. On the line, David from Ottawa, Canada. How you doing, David?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
That was not David. That was us. That's okay. We believe that you are there. We can hear you. There we go. How's it going? It's good to see you.
I'm good.
So are you sitting in your challenging listening environment right now? And tell us kind of what the problem is that you're having.
The problem is our neighbors have mentioned that they can hear what I say sometimes. Or not what I say, what I'm playing.
So they can hear you. They can hear you talking to us right now, and then they can also hear what you're listening to on your system. Yeah. So what exactly are they hearing? Are they hearing the low-end frequencies, or is it just a general loudness, or what's coming through for them?
The eldest son has said it's a loud rumble, or a rumble, mm-hmm. and then the mother has just asked us to turn it down almost every day.
Oh, wow. No matter at what volume you're listening to, or at high volumes or low volumes, or just any volume is too much.
I think so. I have turned my subwoofer down to almost off. It's like 10% or less. It's Klipsch 2.1.
What kind of stuff are you listening to when you get the phone call about the noise?
Either it's an action movie, or it's like Hispanic or Latino music.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anything with a bass line or an explosion.
Sounds about right.
Let's try this. Have you
considered piccolo music, sir? There's some very extraordinary or Carlos Mackay cedar flute music.
Yeah, get really into viola. Have you tried watching, not that this would be at all enjoyable, but have you tried watching or listening to your music with the subwoofer turned off? And when you did that, did they complain?
the mention is not as loud, or I wouldn't say they complained. They did not complain when the subwoofer's off.
Okay.
But I did ask them, and they said they could hear a little.
They could still hear a little. It almost sounds like just a general, like...
noise.
Just a general noise issue. The walls are just not that thick.
So... So we should point out we were sort of talking about this email in pre-show. You have an apartment that is next. You have like a 3-story apartment. It is next to the next apartment, and these are the people that, or maybe the people over here. But one of these people is complaining about the noise. And the thing that kind of struck me, you said you sit about 30 feet away from the television.
Yes, I do.
I have to ask you, as someone who lives in a quaint cottage, workman's cottage, where the entire length of the house is like 40 feet, is there any reason why you're sitting 30 feet away from the screen in your 30-foot living room, or 40-foot living room, or however big this massive room is?
It's the design of the room. There's a fireplace that's on an angle, so I have the TV right next to it on the left, and then I have a sectional couch which is a little further away. And the girlfriend wanted a TV or an end table in between the fireplace and the couch.
Okay.
Your subwoofer, I'm assuming that, so you said you have a separate subwoofer. Do you keep that subwoofer close to the wall that is bordering the neighbor, or is it possible to move that subwoofer to the rear of the room? I know in my experience, that could make all the difference, right? Moving possibly that low-frequency generator away from the offending place.
It's kind of crazy, right? Because when you have 30 feet between you and the speakers... what is an acceptable listening level here, you have to have it considerably louder up there. Because SPL, I'm going to quote, sound pressure level decreases with the doubling of distance by 6 dB. And because it's logarithmic, 6 dB is actually a lot. So what happens is, if you're 30 feet away, to have like a nice 85, 90 dB listening level, like, you know, action movie loud, but not bleeding from the ears loud, you may need to have like 100 dB 30 feet away from you, which means if neighbor mom is like doing whatever she's doing, reading the internet, taking advantage of the processing power of her note 9 on the other side of the wall, she's going to get a much louder experience than you actually are going to be in the same room. The low-end stuff is really tough because a lot of the measurements that were set up to a lot of the tools that were set up to measure sound isolation or how well a room blocks up noise, the standards for that, which was set up in like 1961, in 1961 there basically was no low-end on audio unless you were at a live show. Because speakers didn't really go down that low, so or they just weren't thinking about it when they were setting up these measurement systems. So it's really crazy. When you look at these tools, they measure from like 125 decibels, which is not particularly low, you know, up to like, I want to say 15,000 hertz or something. Not 125, pardon me, 125 hertz, not decibels.
Right.
125 decibels will basically collapse your skull and kill you. 125 hertz, which is, you know, like the middle... upper third of an E string on a bass or something. But the problem is to block like noise below 125 hertz, 150 hertz, you need like 4 inches of concrete. A friend of mine who works for a pretty high-end home theater installer company, he literally like does stuff for people who makes Hollywood movies. Mm-hmm. Like if he was building a bunker for somebody who was, and I say bunker, you'll see why in a second. If he was building a room for somebody who absolutely, positively could not be bothered by the sound of his neighbor's, Chianti delivery with a diesel truck, he would literally pour 3 feet of concrete to make sure pretty much everything down to dB could not get into that room. So the problem is the lower the frequency is, the more difficult it is to prevent going from your side of the wall to their side of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So your idea is actually really good. If you have a subwoofer, if you could put the subwoofer next to the seat, And hopefully it doesn't create sort of, you know, lag issues with the speakers being so far away. If you could put that next to the seat, then you could actually have a fair amount of level, but not have it be so high that it's blasting through the wall in the neighbor's house is a possibility.
Right. Well, yeah, and is your speaker system, is it wireless or wired? I'm assuming it's wired.
It is wired.
It's wired. You know, because depending on the system that you get, if you get a wireless system or a wireless... You know, some of them, the subwoofer is a wireless setup with the two rear speakers plugged into that with the intention that that goes behind your chair, your sofa, or wherever that is. It could go up against the wall, potentially. And then the two speakers, side rear speakers, branch out of that. And that's all transmitted wirelessly back to the front where the setup is. Then you don't have that loud, that almost loudest sound generating speaker right up next to the wall, expecting that to travel across the room to you, but not through the wall onto the other side, where it's annoying somebody.
It's really in terms of the wall that's facing their apartment. Is there anything on that wall? Is there anything that would it be a possibility to do any kind of treatments that might help dampen or lower the amount of you know, audio that hits their wall?
That would be possible. We'd just have a few paintings or such there.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough, right? Because when you start getting into really soundproofing a room, you know, when you're like, I'm going to spend all of the money to soundproof a room, look, a sound-absorbent panel. So you can do stuff like hanging this. And what this will do the best would be like to reduce first order reflections, and it would drop some of the, it would block some of the high end noise.
That's probably more beneficial for him than it is for her.
It would actually clean up the audio. But what would happen is, right, is the audio would sort of hit this, and a large amount of the energy from that would basically hit the wall behind it and then get radiated through. And what's crazy is when you look at the construction of a wall, when you start trying to soundproof a room, what you end up doing is at the highest level, you have like the perfect situation would be if you could build a second wall inside of the, like, this is the existing wall. You would build like a second wall that is insulated, and you use something like green glue with a second layer of sheetrock. And what you do is literally decouple that wall. So the energy hits that wall. The green goo, which is an actual name of a product, actually converts the energy from the sound into heat, like very tiny amounts of heat, but prevents it from getting through the wall and into their wall. And then also, by the way, like, just building a wall isn't enough. You not only have to like build that second wall and, you know, put the technology into it to decouple that wall and absorb that audio, but you also have to seal the edges of that wall, because, like, you know, a little like 18th of like 1/8 of an inch gap across like 9 or 12 feet will create a hole this big, which is basically like shoving a speaker through the wall to their house, which is a really long way of saying is it's tough, because you're essentially like that sheetrock on the side of your apartment is essentially you got the speakers turned up down here. The sound, right? We talked about having a big wide sound field off your tweeter. So you got that big wide sound field. It hits their wall, or it hits your wall. It causes that sheetrock to vibrate, which causes the studs inside to vibrate, which causes their side of the sheetrock on their side of the wall to vibrate. And you send all the audio into their apartment, which is a long way of saying you're kind of doomed if you want to listen to action movies without getting an angry phone call. Now, you could, if it's a possibility, like pour a 4-inch concrete wall inside it, and the concrete will essentially deaden the audio.
Your landlord will allow you to do that, right?
I'm sure your landlord will think this is great.
I'm sure.
You could build a false wall, right? You could build a second inside wall using all the cool technology that they have to isolate, you know, the sheetrock from the studs from their wall, and essentially create an air gap, an audio gap between your wall and their wall. You can.
That's what they do in high-end, like, recording studios and everything. The entirety of the space is done like that.
You know, you can move closer to the speakers when you're listening, so you don't have to turn the speakers up as high. You can move the speakers closer to your couch, so you don't have to turn the volume up as high. You could also, if you're feeling, you know, like spending money, you could get, you know, like Sennheiser, for example, makes headphones, really good wireless headphones, where they can pair up two or three headphones off of a single transmitter.
Well, yeah, and you had mentioned, David, in kind of your, you know, setting up the topic here to us before the show, that that is a possibility, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are you open to watching these action movies with, yes, like, some wireless headphones that sync up perfectly? And
it's funny, like, I don't know if they have... there's a company. It's you could do wireless ones, which aren't bad. You know, the other thing you can do is they make boxes. Behringer is a company that makes some fairly inexpensive stuff. But essentially, you could send the stereo signal from your television to this box, and it would have like five or six plugs in it. And then you could each plug your favorite headphones into that, and then adjust the volume on that. You're going to spend, if you start doing it wirelessly, because we don't really have broadcast Bluetooth yet, which is the idea that one source will feed a whole bunch of Bluetooth headphones. You could, like, the Sennheiser stuff's really nice, their TV stuff, because it'll broadcast to at least two, and I think in some cases three headsets. Mm-hmm. They make really, really nice stuff, including a fair amount of the low end. Or you could get your favorite wired headphones and plug them into a box. I bring that up because I don't want everybody to be exactly. It's like $25. You could run a cable from the television audio output into that. Everybody gets to adjust their levels, because I'm always the guy that's like, could you turn the level down? It's too loud. And I drive everybody nuts because, like, yeah, you know what I think is too loud.
Discreet control.
And then you can use whatever earbuds you like, or whatever your favorite headphones are, or everybody can wear the same headphones if you want to have matching headphones for movie night. But I listen to a lot of stuff with headphones, because a lot of the time I get to watch stuff is when my kids are asleep, because there's certain things, if I play, my kids will have nightmares and everybody gets really frustrated.
Right.
You know, I think that's probably, in this case, because of that big giant wall you're fighting with and the room layout, probably your best option. Actually, I see a wireless Sennheiser. John's over here.
Nope.
So these are pretty slick. Which one is this? Oh, very nice.
Which one is this? Oh, that's a good question. It's the HDR 180s?
Yeah, so they make several different models, and you can usually pair them to at least a second, and possibly in some of the earlier models, a third. And this would be the wireless transmitter. And then you can each have your own sort of discrete headsets, and have so everybody can have a volume that doesn't make them feel like their ears or their eardrums are about to meet in the center of their skull.
Yeah, they're comfortable. So that was a lot of information. So you're gonna completely redesign the wall. You're gonna buy a
just pour 6 inches of concrete,
system,
man,
and wireless headphones. You're gonna do all these things, and hopefully one of those is gonna work. yeah, it doesn't sound like it's a very, very easy challenge to work around.
Yeah, I feel for you, because I used to live in an apartment in Hoboken, and if I made noise in one part of the apartment, the owner's sister could hear everything, and she was a fantastic woman. She's a wonderful human being, but she was just like, if you could just not sort of walk in that part of the apartment, mm-hmm, like ever. And I never did find out what she did, but like me moving in that part of the apartment just drove her nuts. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to deal with, especially a super long wall like that. It's really, really hard to control sound going through something like that.
Of all of these options, what do you think? Is there anything in there that kind of stands out to you as far as like the solution you might pursue?
The headphones seems like the easier of the options.
Yeah.
You don't want to pour concrete?
Not really.
Well, if you do decide to pour concrete, please document it, and we'll
send us photos.
Send us photos or video or whatever. But I really hope we've given you some information that's going to help you with this, because that does sound like a big challenge.
Don't forget to seal the edges of the concrete if you pour concrete. It'd be tough to pour all that concrete, then have the noise pouring in through that last little gap. Oh. Audio is ridiculous.
David, thank you so much for letting us
thank you.
Hopefully give you some tips and ideas to solve your problem. Take care, David. We will talk to you soon. Best of luck kind of sealing it all up. Megan Maroney and Alex Lindsay are actually going to be here. As you obviously already know, Leo's not here for the next, I think, this and three more episodes. So he's going to be out for a while. So Megan and I are going to be dancing in here with different people along the way. Megan and Alex Lindsay are going to be on next week. And if you want them to answer your tech questions, they can. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Speaking of Megan, she recently had a chance to take the hydrogen-powered 2018 Honda Clarity fuel cell out for a spin.
Well, an actual car that has a fuel cell. I'm envisioning Megan on top of like an actual fuel cell.
Woohoo! Here we go.
It's got wheels.
Yes, I don't know how they did it, but they did it. She went out with the Navigant Research senior analyst Sam Abu El Samid to check it out, and here it is.
Sam Abu El Samid is here. He's come for a visit with the Honda Clarity FCV fuel cell vehicle.
It's electric, and it doesn't have a plug.
It's the hydrogen that seems dangerous.
Completely harmless. It's the most abundant element in the universe.
It is a really good-looking car. So how does the mileage work on that? How far can you get?
So this one's got a range of about 320 miles on a full tank of hydrogen.
And so where do I get this hydrogen? Can I make it in my bathtub and pour it in?
Yeah, just a couple of electrodes in your tub, and it'll and electrolysis will generate hydrogen. Just don't light anything and don't have any open flames around that. No, there's about 36 hydrogen stations in the state of California right now. Closest one from Petaluma is about 30 miles south of here in Mill Valley. But there's a whole string of them around the Bay Area and more along the coast and then down in the Los Angeles area. So if you live between San Francisco and L.A., you can probably get along okay with a hydrogen vehicle. Anywhere farther than that, for now at least, it's going to be tougher until we get more hydrogen stations installed. And there are more being put in all the time.
And is this car available now?
It is available now. It's been available for about 9 months, I think, now. It's available to lease for about $399 a month from Honda.
It is very hot out here. Yes. Does it have air conditioning?
It does have air conditioning,
and
it works. All right, let's get in the car. All right.
So it has Android Auto here. Does it also have CarPlay?
It does have support for CarPlay for those people that insist on using an iPhone, like yourself.
Yeah.
It works with both of them. It's got touchscreen display. It also has a navigation system of its own built in as well, which you can get to from here. So you've got the standard Honda navigation system and also the smartphone-based systems.
So it's very nice. Is this like sort of the high end or just the standard?
There's only one trim level available for the Clarity, at least for the fuel cell version right now. So it's a pretty high end trim version. So you got some Alcantara, much like the
Surface Go.
And some of the other Surface products. Some real wood trim, nice leather seating. I've always been quite fond of the seats in Honda cars. I've found them to be quite comfortable and supportive.
So tell me about the Clarity line. This isn't the first Clarity, right?
Right. So right now, the current generation Clarity, it was designed by Honda to be a completely electrified platform. So there's three different variations of it. There's this one here, which has a fuel cell. You know, it's an electric car, but it doesn't have a plug. What it does is it uses a fuel cell to combine hydrogen and oxygen to produce water and electricity. So it produces electricity on the fly. It does have a small battery, so it's a hybrid, so it does regenerative braking as well to improve the overall efficiency. But it's an electric car. There's no gas engine. There's no combustion going on at all. And then there's also a plug-in hybrid version that has about 45 miles of electric range, and then it runs as a regular hybrid. And then there's also a battery electric version that has about 85 miles of electric driving range.
So does the fuel cell cost more than a battery hybrid or less?
Today, it still costs more because production volumes are still pretty low, but they're ramping those up. Honda actually has a joint venture with General Motors to develop their next generation fuel cell stack, and they're actually going to be producing them in Michigan, at a plant in Michigan, the same plant where GM assembles the battery packs for the Chevrolet Volt, is also going to be producing fuel cells for use by both GM and Honda. So the cost is coming down, and they've figured out ways to design the fuel cells so they're less expensive. They use less of the catalyst that makes them so expensive.
So you stopped in Marin on the way here, which is about approximately halfway from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. How much did it cost? It looks like you haven't filled totally up. You're halfway, is that accurate?
Yeah, Well, it's full. It's almost full right now. Hydrogen is, I think, currently about $8 a kilogram, which is how they sell it. Because it's a gas, it's a compressed gas, they sell it by weight instead of by volume. And a kilogram of hydrogen has about the same energy as a gallon of gasoline. But a fuel cell is about 2.5 to 3 times more efficient. So this car gets about 60 to 65 miles per kilogram, which is quite a bit more efficient than, say, a Honda Civic.
And so how does the fueling process work?
It's actually really straightforward. You drive up to the hydrogen pump. It looks very much like a gas pump. There's a nozzle at the where the fuel filter would normally be on most cars on the rear fender. You open it up. There's a metal fitting on there. You put the nozzle on, and you pull the grip just like you would with a regular gas pump. And that locks the nozzle onto the fitting on the car. And then you just stand there and wait for it. You know, you let go and just wait 5 minutes or so, and then it's all done.
So the other FCV is the Mirai.
Mm-hmm.
Have you driven that?
I have driven that. I actually like this one better. This one, I think, is better looking. It drives better than the Mirai does. The Mirai, you know, the Mirai's been on the market for a couple of years. It's not quite as much fun to drive as this one. This one's got a little better performance. It's roomier, and it's just more enjoyable to drive, I think.
This is pure fuel cell. There's no plug-in. So if you run out of hydrogen, I guess you can still say gas, can't you? Say
yes,
you run out of gas.
Because it is a gas. It's a compressed gas.
What do you do? I guess you don't run out of gas. That's the...
you try to make sure that you stay within range of a hydrogen filling station. There are trucks that have been used for refilling vehicles, you know, fuel cell test vehicles that have been, when they've been out doing development work, they've got trucks, hydrogen tankers that will come out and refill you, but they're not readily available.
And what about the safety features? Are they pretty similar to standard Hondas, or are there any kind of special safety features in this?
Yeah, it's got the full Honda Sensing driver assist package that you would get in an Accord or a Civic or most other current Honda models. It comes as standard. So you've got adaptive cruise control, radar-based adaptive cruise control. There's a lane keeping system. So, you know, when you're going over 40 miles an hour, when it detects the lanes, it will actually, you know, if you start to drift out of the lane, it will actually try to nudge the car back into the lane, keep you in the lane. So it's not as sophisticated as, say, something like Tesla Autopilot, but it's one of the better systems I've driven out of all the different systems that are on the market.
So is this kind of car better for someone who drives mostly on highways or around town or both?
It's fine for both. You know, it's got good performance, has plenty of acceleration, and so you can use it for pretty much any type of driving that you do.
And so the tank, there's a tank in the trunk and a tank in the back seat?
Underneath the back seat, yeah. So there's two cylindrical gas storage tanks. They hold compressed hydrogen at 10,000 PSI. A larger one is in between the back seat and into the trunk, and then a smaller one is underneath the rear seat.
So what about the danger? Like, is that just purely, like, there's just the idea we think hydrogen bomb, but that's not accurate.
There's no more danger than any other type of vehicle, whether it's a battery vehicle or a gasoline-powered vehicle. The hydrogen storage tanks have a thick aluminum wall, and then they're wrapped in carbon fiber and Kevlar, so they're really strong. They've been tested against penetration. They're actually stronger than a gasoline tank or even the batteries in battery electric vehicles like Leo's Tesla. Safety shouldn't be any more of a problem than it is in any other type of car.
All right. I guess we have to go back outside in the heat now.
Yeah.
Take a look. I want to see what it looks like.
Do you want to drive it?
Sure.
Okay. Well, let's take a look under the hood first,
okay,
and then you can hop in and drive it. So doesn't look a whole lot different from a conventional car, you know, because the fuel cell stack is just basically a big rectangle. So this is the fuel cell stack here. The hydrogen comes in, gets combined with air, and it goes through a chemical reaction that produces water and electricity. So the only exhaust, the only emissions from this car is water vapor. So to judging by the how brown the landscape was as I was driving up here, you could probably use a little more of that around here. And that's it. It's just water. There's no other emissions from this car.
All right. You sure you trust me to drive it?
I think so.
Man, she was zooming out of the parking lot. Did you see her take off?
I mostly appreciate that they were very clear about all of the things they do to prevent the hydrogen from becoming Hindenburg. Because there was a lot of comments. There was a lot of Hindenburg humor in the chat room.
Oh, there's always Hindenburg humor in the chat room.
Really?
No, I don't know.
That's really creepy. It's even creepy for the internet.
And the internet's pretty creepy. Hey, what do you say you want to answer some emails?
No.
People sit down at their computer. They sit in front of their keyboard and they move their fingers until they write a question. Then they send it to us.
I don't have my reading glasses on, but if I did, you'd realize I am actually old enough to recognize the email.
Good. Well, I'm going to explain it to you anyways. It's time for the mailbag. It rolls in as it usually does, and there's usually a surprise in here. Apparently, this is a surprise. Oh, this is a postcard
from
the Twit family. From, is this from Lisa and Leo? It is. It says, hi, family. This is August 29th from SFO. They say, we are about to sail around the Western Mediterranean for the next 3 weeks. This is the first of a bunch of postcards we plan to send you from our trip. We're hoping to mail one from every port. Next stop, Barcelona, Spain. Barcelona, Spain. That's how you're supposed to say it, right?
A postcard in every port.
Postcard in every port. There you go.
This is a very high quality postcard.
Plane. That is the plane, and then they sent the postcard
from.
Bill
Atkinson's photo card
app. Ah, Bill Atkinson's
there you have it.
Photo card app. Very nice. So I guess we're going to be getting kind of regular check-ins from Lisa and Leo.
It doesn't look like a cruise ship.
No. It's a pretty funny looking cruise ship. All right, now we'll get some questions. That wasn't really a question. That was more just like,
it was a
aren't
surprise.
You jealous? All right, pick one of those bad boys.
The one you're handing towards me.
All right, sure.
Oh, this one's for you.
All right, you read it, and I'll see what I can do.
Hello, Jason. I'm looking at replacing my Nexus 6P. I've looked at mid-range devices like the Nokia 6.1 or 7 Plus because they support Android One. I love Android One. As well as the OnePlus 6 because they all offer the promise of ongoing security updates. Time will tell with OnePlus. I'm even willing to wait until the Pixel 3 is released. I use my smartphone mostly to listen to podcasts, texting, and taking pictures of my daughter. Good speakers and a better camera than the Nexus 6P would be great. Money is really no object, but cheaper is better. Sincerely, Aaron from Canada.
Cheaper is better, but you want nice quality photos. And then Android One seems to be a theme through what he's talking about. And that's kind of Android One is kind of like the analog to the Nexus line, in my opinion.
Well, I went to DEF CON.
Yeah.
And for reasons known only to somehow my phone went from my boot where it goes through security through the X-ray machine to staying the weekend with TSA in Oakland while I was in Las Vegas for DEF CON. I don't know how this happened, but it
lucky.
Happened. It was weird. But so I ended up picking up an E4, which is the sort of entry-level Motorola you can pick up at a Target at midnight in Las Vegas. And three things about that. One, it's amazing how much better the camera was on that compared to a $130 phone several years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of obvious, but, you know, it kind of shocked me how good it was. And two, as soon as I fired up the phone, I got three updates in quick succession. Was the least Android experience I've ever had on an Android phone.
You actually got to see an update. That must have been amazing.
It was incredible. because my very first Android experience was with like a G4, and the micro SD card slot wouldn't work, and Motorola's like, it's fixed. And AT&T was like, it's fixed, but we're not done putting crap into the OS yet, so you can't have it. Ha ha. And I was like, they didn't do that ha ha at the end, but it felt like it. But I totally get like the whole desire to have Android One. It's amazing because you get updates. You may not get updates for as long as you want to own the phone.
Yeah.
Because I got an angry email on TechThing a couple weeks ago because somebody was like, I would still be using my Nexus 6P, but there are no longer any updates for it, including security updates for it.
No. And, every phone is going to reach its end point. Every phone reaches a point to where
as much as we don't want that to happen, that's the reality, right? Even the Android One devices have promised security updates for promised updates for 2 years,
yeah.
Security updates for 3 from the point of manufacture. So that's, you know, that's 3 years. That's better than the promises that have been made for a long time on Android and never fulfilled.
Probably better than most routers. Like, I've had several routers where there was, like, one update because, say, it wouldn't power on, and then there were never any updates. It's not because the router was perfect or finished. It was because they had your money. Thank you.
Right. Moving on from there,
so
because
I've,
there are other people to get their money from.
What do you think of Nokia phones at this point?
Nokia phones are interesting. Like, someone in chat kind of pointed out that Nokia 6.1 is an interesting phone, but it's probably not going to give you the camera capabilities that you're looking for. And actually, some of the Android One devices, like Android One as a category right now, really seems to be kind of in that mid-range area. So, you know, the cameras, that's going to fluctuate. I know that the OnePlus 6 has a pretty great camera for the price.
Right.
You're going to pay $529. So it's a little more than, let's say, the Nokia 6.1, which is $229.
Sure.
Big price difference there, and you're probably going to get a better camera. Like, well, you're guaranteed going to get a better camera for that difference between those two. So the Nokias are interesting. They're a little bit on the lower end of some of these Android One devices. Motorola actually just announced at IFA the Moto One and the One Power.
Mm-hmm.
They are 5.9-inch and 6.2-inch display phones, 5,000 milliamp hour battery, both running Android One. You know, it's got a notch on the display if that's your thing, but there you go. They don't have price or availability on that yet, but I'm guessing somewhere in the $400 range for those as well.
Hmm.
Maybe $400 or $500, somewhere around there. And then if you're thinking Pixel 3, like, I know you want to save on cost, but you did say that the Pixel 3 could be an option. So I will just say that, you know, if pictures is at the top of your list, you probably can't do much better. I mean,
right.
they're pretty much top class as far as that's concerned.
Do you buy into the rumors that the Google Pixel 3 is going to be a $2,000 phone?
So that is based on the fact that there's this whole glut of Pixel 3 XLs that suddenly leaked all over the
right.
Ukrainian and Russian kind
no,
of
literally
media.
A guy in the Ukraine,
yes.
like a case of Pixel 3s fell off a truck. Foxconn is in Google are certainly trying to figure out how he got these.
There's no way these things are selling new for $2,000.
Okay.
I think that person is selling them, from what I understand,
okay.
for $2,000 to anyone who wants to buy that phone before it's even announced right now. You can. It's just going to cost you $2,000.
Okay.
And I think that's where that's coming from. There's no way on earth Google's going to charge that much for these phones, especially because when you really take a look at the specs, a lot of people are saying these specs aren't even worth $1,000, you know, when you compare it to other phones like the Note 9.
That's assuming the specs that they're getting are legit.
Absolutely. This is all rumor. This is all pre-announcement. Nothing is official, so who the heck knows? One thing you can guarantee, though, is that the Pixel 3 series is going to have a great camera. If you follow the Pixel 2 price point, not talking the XL, the larger one, if you just go the smaller one, that's right around $649
mm-hmm.
for comparison. I would guess that the Pixel 3 would be somewhere around that range as well. So it's a little bit, it's going to cost you a little bit more, but you're going to get your updates direct from Google. And I think that's worth a lot right there.
Right.
Is being kind of at the front edge of what Google's doing with Android. And you're guaranteed to do that if you get the Pixel 3. So.
And you may get 3 years of updates.
Yeah, you should. And if you don't, raise hell. There you go. Second email. Dave writes in to say, hey, Twit gang, I was intrigued by Patrick's breakdown of pro headphones made in the U.S. in episode 152, which is something I'd prefer to do, but I'm a podcaster of modest means, so they were a bit out of my price range. What are some of the best pro headphones below $400, and are any of them manufactured in the U.S.? Love the show and hearing you all reminisce about your days on Tech TV. Thanks.
Oh. Oh my goodness.
What do you think? Sub $400 headphones.
Oh.
Any options?
Ton of options. When you say pro, I think of like production. And I mentioned them earlier, Sony MDR7506s. I have seen those in more recording studios on the heads of audio engineers, being used by people doing field audio editors at editing station. Those cost $79. You got to spend a lot of money before you get something that sounds a lot better. But like the speaker, the ones I were talking about that were made in the United States, those are by a company called Mr. Speakers. Those are more audiophile. And the Aeon, man, you got to spend $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 before you get something that sounds better than an $800 headphone. Mm-hmm. And $800 headphones sound ridiculous, but if you think of it like an $800 headphone instead of a $20,000 speaker, then maybe actually it starts to make sense.
You're saving money.
Yeah, the MDR7506 is about $80. I'm a big fan of a headphone that's been around forever, Beyerdynamics DT770. It's a closed headphone, so you don't have to worry about noise coming in from outside, and also your neighbors won't hear everything you're doing.
And if you're a podcaster, you want the closed earphone kind of approach. Like, I have the Hi-Fi Man, what is it, how we were talking about it before.
The 400i.
Yes, the 400i. And they're fantastic earphones, and they're probably in this, or headphones, they're probably in this price
category. They sell
for
like $190 right now.
But they are open ear, and you know that's going to leak through some sound. Yeah, those are them.
Yeah, and that's also, I think Brent Butterworth picked those in the Wirecutter as his top headphone under $500.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, they're $180 now. The price is down.
That's crazy. But they were not that low even a year ago.
Do you remember the thing over there where I talked about maybe there was a lot of profit in a lot of these products? Yeah. There is. And, you know, more power to people to make money. But, when I think pro, I automatically think sealed because, you know, if you have an open back headphone, you hear everything from outside. And also everyone outside can hear everything you do. Or worse yet, your microphone can pick up what's coming off of the headphone, which can be awkward.
Yeah.
And irritating and ruin hours of work.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, if you're doing production stuff especially, you want to have that all sealed up. So.
Yeah, but I love those DT770s and the Sony MDR7506 is a classic.
Cool.
A workhorse, if you will.
Yes,
I suspect there are several pairs around us right now.
Oh, these are, it's hard to go into.
Retro is the most gracious comment I've ever heard on the style for these. But I mean, I have a pair of the cousin of those that are like 25 years old. They're on their second headband and their third set of ear pads.
Because you can just swap them out.
Yeah, and they just keep going.
Although I will say about those, if you swivel it wrong, it can snag your finger. I've had that happen a couple of times. Pinch that. I know that may sound kind of petty or whatever, but yeah, it hurt. Be careful with your headphones.
I had the same problem with a StarTAC phone pinching my cheek. I'm still angry about that StarTAC phone. It left like a blood blister across my cheek. It was painful.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
No.
Patrick, this is a lot of fun. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome to get the chance to do this show with you.
Oh, my goodness. I feel excited. Like, we should have an extended conversation at some point where I listen to you. I feel like I talk too much today.
That's why you're here, man. Half of these topics, the home theater stuff, I wish I had more knowledge, more depth of information on that. So that's why you're here, because you brought the knowledge.
You should listen to AVXL. That's the podcast I do with Robert Herron.
Awesome. But where can people find that?
AVXL.com, AVEXCEL.com. We talk a lot about home theater and screens and audio and headphones and stuff like that. But actually, I've been getting my Android on with you guys.
Oh, right.
Because I'm looking for all of the applications now. Because I was looking at my iPhone, which had like 300 applications on it, and I was looking at that G6, which had like 15 applications on it, and I was like, somewhere between these two is the appropriate balance.
Yes, right. Oh, 300's too much, but yeah, we can do better for you. Well, we should get you on all about Android one of these days.
I would be honored.
If you're interested. We'll talk. That sounds like a lot of fun. Patrick Norton, everyone loves it when you come on. Come on the new screensaver. So thanks for letting me crash your party.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Twit, by the way, has a newsletter. If you want to follow everything that we're doing, it's not just the new screensavers. We've got a whole bunch of shows, a whole lot going on each and every week. You can go to twit.tv/newsletter and you can subscribe to that. We'll send you just basically an email with some news, announcements, some clips from throughout the week, that sort of stuff. We don't go nuts with it. We just send you a little bit of a newsletter once a week and let you know what we're working on, because we always got stuff that we're cooking up. You can subscribe to this show by going to twit.tv/NSS. Find us on YouTube, of course, youtube.com/thenewscreensavers. If you want to send us an email, you can be part of the mailbag, or you know, possibly even join for the call for help. You can do that by emailing newscreensavers@twit.tv. And I think that's about it. That's all the important stuff. I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo this week. Next week, Megan Maroney will be back, as we mentioned earlier. So you won't want to miss that. Thank you, everybody. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of the New Screensavers. Have a good week. Bye, everybody.